Welcome to the Commerce Tomorrow podcast, your one stop to learn about the technology that's powering the future of commerce. Here are your hosts, Dirk and Kelly.
Welcome to another episode of the Commerce Tomorrow podcast. I'm here today with my co-host, Kelly Götzsch.
Hi, Dirk. Hi, all.
And today we have a special guest. I would call this podcast episode actually the analyst edition. Today our special guest is Jeff Scowron. He is Digital Commerce Research Director of Gartner. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Kelly. Hi, Dirk. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being with us. To get started, for those who don't know you, Jeff, would you be so kind and give us a quick introduction about yourself and also tell us a little bit more what you're doing at Gartner?
Sure, absolutely. So I've been with Gartner for a couple years, but I've been in the e-commerce industry for 20 years ago at this point now. I started off with a company named US Internet Working right out of college. We were writing code for dental websites and candy websites and all sorts of wonderful pre-bubble e-commerce solutions. Not shockingly, when the bubble burst, that company had some issues. We were gobbled up by Bain Capital, merged with a company called Interpath, and then sold off to AT&T, where I spent the majority of those 20 years running a professional services team that supported our managed hosting e-commerce division. We hosted and ran a lot of big box retailers, but also some B2B solutions, touted ourselves as one of the first software as a service provider, which back then was much more about hosting and managed services than actually a SaaS solution. From there, our AT&T group got sold off to IBM, spent a year or so at IBM, and then I made a switch in career and came over to Gartner, and I'm part of Gartner for Technical Professionals. And Dirk, as you've mentioned, I cover digital commerce primarily.
Very interesting. And just for everybody's benefit, Jeff was the guy. So when I was in professional services with ATG, Jeff was my counterpart on the AT&T side. So back in the day, AT&T used to do all the big hosting for all these large e-commerce websites at the time. And you had Target, and who else did you have back in your roster then?
Kohl's, Target, rest in peace, we had Blockbuster way back when. Toys R Us came in too, and they are also rest in peace. So we had a bunch of big ones. We had some smallers like Yankee Candle, but a lot of B2C and B2B on both sides of the fence there. We did some work for Marriott, some work for Hilton. I mean, being part of AT&T, you know, we had a lot of exposure to a lot of pretty big companies, pretty big clients. It took us a little while to explain to them that AT&T, yes, does do hosting and e-commerce. But once we got past that, yeah, we were pretty successful for quite a while. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and I still remember, like, it was yesterday, having these lengthy discussions about multi-master or, like, weird garbage collection algorithms or fun times, all of that stuff.
The active deployments. Yeah, I remember those too.
So can you give us a little bit of background on the two halves of Gartner, right? So you have Gartner for IT leaders and for marketing leaders. And technical professionals. So I guess it's three different pillars. What does each division within Gartner do?
Sure, not a problem. So Gartner separates the products based on the roles that we're writing to. So Gartner for IT leaders, or GITL, as we acronym everything that there is in the world, they are the ones who talk more to the CIOs, the CXOs, the directors, the people in leadership positions at the clients and customers we talk to. The ITL team is probably the largest group within Gartner. They publish some of our most well-known, recognizable documents, the Magic Quadrants, critical capabilities, hype cycles, things of that nature. They're writing more towards the market trends, the solutions and vendor comparisons. They cover more of the what are the options and what can I look at. DML, Gartner for Marketing Leaders, as you can probably guess, primarily focuses on marketing-based roles within the companies and clients that we talk to. So what are the right marketing strategies for enabling your commerce solution, getting into more of the marketing technologies, but also how to use them and how to improve the overall marketing capabilities of your company. And then there's the group I sit in, Gartner for Technical Professionals. And while we may be a smaller group at this point, we're doing pretty well for ourselves as well. We write more towards the folks with the hands on the keyboard, the senior director, senior engineers, senior developers, solution architects. we're writing more research on how to do something. So some of the first notes that I published at Gartner were how to implement a digital commerce platform. Still speaking a little monolithic back then, fine. But we're trying to write a little more prescriptive, you know, give our readers direct advice, recommendations, suggestions for how to get something done. And we obviously cover much more than digital commerce. I sit in a group,
And what are some examples of questions? But why don't you finish your thought first?
Sure, absolutely. So the questions, so I right now I've kind of expanded my coverage a little bit beyond just digital commerce. Gartner puts digital commerce as part of the overall CRM landscape, and it's a component of CRM. CRM also obviously includes customer experience and customer experience engagement. I've been doing some research recently on digital experience platforms, chatbots, conversational interfaces, and I'll get inquiries such as, you know, what are the chatbot vendor platforms? How do they differ from building from a framework, for example, like a Lex or a Dialogflow versus a platform from a Nuance or a Creative Virtual, for example. And we'll do some comparisons technically of how you would implement, how you would integrate, how you would support and run those different systems. Similarly, with commerce type questions, you know, how should we integrate to enable real-time inventory? For example, we could talk through structures and approaches and caching algorithms and ways to do that. And then so the group that I sit in is part of a larger group covering enterprise applications. And then a larger group, even part of that, that covers all application development, integration services. We kind of cover the whole gamut from building it from scratch through vendor solutions, enterprise application solutions. At this point, we don't get much into ERP. That's an area we're looking to add in the future. But we're a relatively, my group, the CRM Digital Commerce group, we launched about a year and a half ago, about half a year after I joined. So we're still relatively young from an agenda perspective. Where some of those larger groups, the custom development groups, the security groups, the database coverage groups, you know, they're very well established with a large readership group, and they've been around writing some really good research for quite a while now.
Can you share some ideas that you're currently working on? So some upcoming research that might get published soon, just to give our readers.
I think the most relevant one. Yeah, definitely. I think the most relevant, Kyle Davis, my agenda manager, he and I obviously discuss what research topics we're going to write on, where we're going to go. The next research note I'm going to work on, we're calling kind of this core topic commerce note, where we're planning to write fairly lengthy. So GTP notes tend to be a bit lengthier. My notes typically are somewhere between 25 and say 35 pages or so. Whereas the IT leader notes, like the Magic Quadrants, tend to be 10, 15, 20 pages. When there's comparisons, a little longer. But our core commerce note that we're going to work on next, planning to be a mix of both some foundational fundamentals, you know, what are the integration points, what are the control points, how do you support digital commerce, but then also work in some of the future thinking approaches, you know, how do we plug into these headless architectures, how do we support conversational interfaces, different ways of doing integration. GraphQL's popped up more recently. So our plan is to start building ourselves a nice foundational set of commerce research and building it initially from this core commerce, kind of commerce topic, you know. This will be slightly broad, covering quite a bit of digital commerce, but we think it'll be a good starting point to really build up a good, strong foundation of commerce research going forward.
And I have just one question out of curiosity. You mentioned that some of these published documents have about 40 to 45 pages. Is it just one researcher working on that, or how many people are working on one of these research documents?
So from an authoring perspective, it varies. Typically, they are solo author, individual author written notes. Once you get past the peer, once you write the note, it goes into peer review, and then 3, 4, 5, 6 other analysts will review the note, provide feedback. Past that, it goes into editing, and there's a whole editing team. So there's, you know, quite a few people in the whole process of things. But typically, these are primarily single analyst research notes that are created. We are obviously, we do some co-authoring for sure. And co-authoring, we try to create these kind of cohorts where there's a couple, so say there's three analysts, myself and Gary and Soyab, a couple other analysts at Gartner, who all cover chatbots. We consider ourselves a cohort of chatbot topic, and we're working to refresh some of our existing chatbot research notes in a joint manner. So three of us are working on that note. That core commerce note I mentioned before, however, that'll primarily be me writing it. But there are multiple steps along the way, an analyst review where we present our findings early on with 10, 15 other analysts, get feedback, make changes. And then once the writing's done, as I mentioned, peer review is a real significant part of, you know, really improving the notes. It can be a little harsh sometimes to have somebody reviewing and commenting everything that you've written up. But it's all in the guise of creating better research and, you know, creating value for our customers.
I love that process. It almost sounds like you're writing a dissertation or something. And, and I guess that makes sense given Gartner is awfully close to Harvard and a bunch of other universities there. So I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, it's just great to get the additional feedback. There's a lot of smart people here. So you know, getting all the different views on the topics that you're writing on. You know, there's not a lot of people who cover digital commerce at the depth I do, but there's plenty of people who cover integration approaches, you know, API design, security elements, all kind of the core components that would make up a good commerce solution. So it's you really benefit a lot from that peer review and the comments you'll get from other analysts, for sure.
Yeah. So you've really seen it all, right? You've been with commerce since the 90s. And I know this is kind of a broad question, so I apologize in advance, but what are some of the major trends you've seen, right? So clearly we've moved from monoliths to microservices, but, you know, it'd be worthwhile just having you spend a few minutes talking through all the changes you've seen.
Sure. I mean, if I think back to some of the first projects I did, even when we were US Internet working, you know, we had to code everything. The platforms were immature at the time. It wasn't until I got, you know, bumped into you, Kelly, and working with ATGs and the IBM platforms where I didn't have to write every single piece of functionality we need. We built our own shopping carts, our own promotion systems, our own inventory management systems. So just seeing the platforms kind of mature over time to provide the capabilities that we need and be usable. You know, and then from my perspective, working with AT&T, we had to figure out ways to deploy those solutions in, you know, the modular, reliable, redundant manners, which led to a lot of hardware. And then the cloud took over, right? The cloud really changed a lot of things, pushing a lot of services out of the data centers, moving a lot of the effort, I think, into the integration side of things. I was thinking about this before. My tasks way back when were worried about how do I get my order information out of commerce and back to the backend system? How do I get my product and inventory feeds up? Well, now we've got integrations between the commerce engine, multiple front ends, you know, the DXPs, the WCMs, purpose-built mobile applications. And we've really moved more towards a overall distributed kind of architecture. For the most part, we're seeing a lot more, not just for commerce, but for a lot of applications. The cloud's behind a lot of that. Microservices, mini services, you know, that comes up quite often too in conversations. I like to, just add a little bit of caution that everything doesn't have to be a microservice as long as you're following the principles of microservices, independently deployable, scalable, implementable, you know, taking advantage of those aspects that will make the solution better for you as a vendor and obviously your customers. But then, you know, there are some places where a microservice implementation just, you know, might be overkill and too much effort. So there's definitely a balancing act there. But overall, it's been quite the shift from, you know, growing up, or at least when I started, really having to code and build everything yourself and architect ways to host these things. And now that the platforms are much more capable, much more distributed, and much more integrated, really, with things beyond just our backend systems.
You know, what we're seeing a lot of is... And I have to credit a friend of mine, John Ponella. He's been using the term unplatforming, right? So back in the 90s, there weren't really a lot of platforms on the market. And then over the 2000s onwards, I think a lot of the platforms really hit their peak of maturity. And mm-hmm. Now we see a lot of folks building pieces, buying pieces, and they're... assembling these collections of APIs from different vendors.
Yeah.
Do you see the same thing? Like, where do you see the platform space heading? Do you think in 5 or 10 years, people will even buy platforms anymore?
Well, I think we're already seeing some of the, like you mentioned, API integration, individual services. Maybe, you know, we could see it going almost to like an application platform as a service approach for commerce, like just use the functionality and the components that you want access to, as opposed to having to deploy the whole platform and every single part of it. I think there's definitely something there in respect to you're going to want to plug particular aspects, particular functionality capabilities into maybe the mobile app, different from how you want to plug it into a chatbot or conversational interface. Having that flexibility to just integrate and use the pieces that you need. Now that we're at the point where people are mostly comfortable with deploying things into the cloud and cloud services and not having to have their hands on hardware at all times. I think that there's definitely something to that for sure.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree on that. Now, as we talked a little bit about the technology changes and fundamental shifts that happened over the last probably 20 years in the commerce space, I think one crucial part of that is also the customer experience. Often it's discussed in a disconnected kind of way. But when we put customer experience into that and you look back to the last 10, 15 years, related to that, what are the changes that you have seen over there? And probably what are the changes that are yet to come?
Yeah, well, definitely that separation, the whole headless approach where we're no longer relying on the commerce platform to be our customer experience platform as well. So moving kind of more towards, as Kelly was mentioning, just plugging in particular components or capabilities into a separate customer experience management solution. The DXPs have come up quite a bit. I'm still a little shaky on how I feel about a DXP overall, but from an evolution of web content management, of deploying those capabilities into a cloud cached, you know, CDN type solution, where you can help to guarantee some of the performance, the end user performance at least, that's definitely areas we're seeing. In terms of the CX focus, but also connecting other applications, kind of ancillary or connected applications to the commerce solution. I alluded to it earlier. Gartner defines CRM as a collection of capabilities, digital commerce, marketing, customer support, sales support, and CRM in general. The continuing or connecting the experience across those applications is something that's been coming up more and more as how do we improve the customer experience? How do we make it seamless for the customer to place his order, connect customer support, maybe get a marketing ad sent to them? How do we connect that whole experience, create a continuous connected, it's going beyond omni-channel, we're calling it kind of multi-experience, but a connected experience across the different application sets. That's coming up quite often now in our CX discussions. It's rooted a bit also in the kind of unified customer profile or customer 360 view of things, where you're trying to have the ability to, no matter where the customer is coming to you, empowering each application to know who the customer is, know what they've been, and really personalize and streamline the experience for them. So working within that set or that suite of application sets and integrating them tightly together, that's coming up quite a bit. We see that from vendors too, as well as talking to customers about it. There definitely seems to be a push towards kind of eliminating or smoothing out some of those rough seams between applications.
That's a lot of technologies that companies need to get under one hood actually to deliver a great customer experience, if I just collect everything that you just mentioned. There's always a discussion going on should you go for a suite approach where everything is in and mostly to some degree pre-integrated, or do you do best of breed with APIs and pick the solutions that you like? I think there's no clear answer to that. I think actually the answer is specific to the company and to the demands. But how would you put it? When would you recommend looking into the suites? When do you think a more technical approach and probably best of breed approach would be a better fit for a company? Is there actually even a good answer to that?
I think the way you said it depends. It's probably the overall answer. But the other way I like to look at it too is the vendor suites are still coming together. And historically, Kelly, we've had some challenges working with just software components from one particular vendor trying to make, the app server talk to the cache server, talk to the Golden Gate system, making all those components work together. Now, the suites, these customer engagement suites, they are not necessarily completely well integrated, to say that in a nice, fine sort of way. there's challenges there too. As much as vendors are pushing the suite, worrying that it's just marketing fluff versus they've actually taken the time to do the integration, to connect the data models, to connect the functionality across those application sets, the suites are still maturing. For some vendors, there are others that have quite a good offering, but even if you look at, for example, Salesforce, who has their B2C commerce solution, which is not integrated with their overall sales cloud solutions or service cloud solutions, you have to spend time and effort to make that connection, to implement that integration, essentially. So you could go with the vendor. I still worry a little bit about some of the smoke and mirrors on the suite side of things, the vendor suite side of things. Plus, in reality, most of us are already running some sort of essentially best of breed or suite solution. I talked to many more customers that are, you know, how do we change? How do we update? How do we move from something we already have? Not as many greenfield opportunities, at least that I've been speaking to. So it's more of dealing with what's there, which tend to be more the best of breed integrated solutions from the customers we talk to. But to your point, I definitely do think it depends on relationships, depends on the knowledge base, the skills you have in the company, and kind of where you want to go with things. If you're a company that likes to tie into one particular vendor to get those capabilities, and you have faith that vendor solution is going to be integrated and not all fall back on you to do all that integration work again, yeah, I can see some value there. I just worry a little bit about the smoke and mirrors on some of that stuff.
Well said. So I have a similar question on microservices. So clearly the Walmarts and Amazons of the world are microservice based, right? And Amazon was famous for having really started the concept of microservices. But I think you could also argue a mom and pop shop, you know, who's selling pants, who has 10 SKUs in their product catalog, does not need to use microservices. So where is the threshold between monolith and microservices? When would you select one versus the other? And also, how much blending is possible? We see an awful lot of that, but I'd love to hear that from you.
We see an awful lot of blending too. I mean, we write that up in a lot of our research notes too, that multi-grained service architecture, where there are some applications that are still monoliths. There are some that are the mini service, kind of that mini between the micro and the monolith, as well as the microservice side of things too. That's definitely a common approach because customers have. I mean, the reality is people still have these monoliths around and running, and to rip them out and replace them or to refactor them or boil them down to microservices is not a trivial task, right? There's a lot of effort there. There's a lot of work that has to be done. I like to kind of default back to the, you know, let's think of the principles of microservices, the independence, the modularity, the scalability, and work that into the overall solution. Does it have to go all the way down to microservices? Well, as you mentioned, it kind of depends on the scale and the solution that you're trying to deploy. If you're a large system, you need massive scaling and you want to distribute the implementation and control of each individual functionality, sure, there's a lot of value in that. But there's a lot of cost, time, money, people effort to implement not just each function, but then all like the service mesh and all the applications that have to, all the infrastructure, application infrastructure that has to come together to support the microservices. So there's quite a bit of effort there. We see more of, I would say, the multi-grained approach, where there's some solutions or some components that make sense a little more for a microservice. But then people are still, they're still living with monoliths. They're still out there. They're still working. And to some degree, there's a little bit of, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But people are, they are looking to find ways to be more modular and scalable. And eventually we'll probably get a little farther along. But there is a significant cost and time to get involved. As you guys know, with moving things to microservices implementation is definitely not a trivial task.
Yeah, and I agree. Microservices are not ideal for a good segment of the market out there because it is more complex. What you gain, though, is you gain the ability to release very quickly. And I like a model where maybe you have an old monolith, but then you start carving out pieces. Right, and we see this a lot. Somebody will carve out search, and they'll start calling a third-party search SaaS service. Yep. You know, and then they'll carve out pricing and then inventory, and before they know it, they've really strangled their monolith, and they switch to more of a best of breed from different SaaS vendors and components that they built in house. I'm a huge fan of pragmatism in that regard. So on that topic. You know, the challenge that folks are starting to face as they expose more and more APIs and consume more APIs is, all right, I've got, you know, X number of REST endpoints, you know, into the hundreds. How do I start making calls that span multiple REST endpoints? So say I want to retrieve an order detail page, and that requires me hitting the order page and then the product microservice and the pricing, like, you have all these microservices you have to hit. We see GraphQL, but you know, I'm curious to hear what you think about GraphQL. Does it have legs? and what folks have been doing instead of GraphQL to solve this very real challenge.
I think GraphQL does have legs, especially in the commerce and the integration space between commerce and the CX applications, right, where you want to control the data elements, pulling your pricing, your inventory information, having that control of what data I need on what particular web page, mobile application. I think that in of itself gives GraphQL some legs for sure. I think that's one of those technologies that we're going to be researching further, and that'll be probably part of the core commerce note that I mentioned earlier. It definitely fits. I've spoken to a few vendors who have started to shift some of their integration frameworks to use GraphQL. So I definitely think there's some value there. I don't know quite as much about the OData integration approach. I've heard it can be slightly bloated compared to a GraphQL implementation. But I definitely think there's some definitely legs and value there. And that is something I plan to, between Kyle and myself, we both plan to research further and include in our notes going forward. Not just the core commerce note, but we have upgrades to our headless implementation notes. Those are places where these sort of integration evolutions, I guess, kind of what GraphQL is, really, really do seem to make sense. Where we're trying to drive performance, we want to control the data transfer back and forth. I think there's some real good value there from a GraphQL perspective.
As we are already talking about what comes next, whom better to ask about the future than an analyst from Gartner? I think we should grab the chance and talk a little bit about what might come up and what is actually growing probably in the market, and also from a focus area that companies need to invest on in the couple of next years. So My first question here would go into the direction of a hype topic, right? If we talk about conversational interfaces and not only mm-hmm. chatbots, but let's talk about voice, especially as a device. Where do you see it currently, and what do you think will happen over the next probably 1 to 2 years?
I'm maybe a little biased because I've written some recent research around chatbots and conversational interfaces. I can't say the numbers I've seen from an adoption perspective are skyrocketing through the roof, but they are getting used. We see probably a little more success chatbot-wise on the customer support side, so offloading some of those live chat calls with an automated system in front of it. We have multiple case studies or examples where that has been successful for customers. The other side of it would be more the customer engagement aspect. So from a commerce perspective, think of a chatbot that instead of sending an abandoned cart email to you, could pop up and start a conversation. Hey, Jeff, you left a pair of sneakers in the cart. Would you like to purchase these? Kind of to create a little more of an intimate conversation or intimate relationship, if we can even say intimate between a computer and a person. But it's moving a little bit beyond just the clicks and moving the mouse around. So I think there is some value there. I don't think the chatbots are going away anytime soon. I definitely think voice is going to continue to grow. As we mentioned earlier, I've got a couple young kids. They would prefer to press the button and ask Siri a question versus pull up any browser or type anything in. The voice interfaces and their usage, we believe, will increase and continue to grow over the years, whether that's in the form of the skills or the actions from Alexa or Google, or actually integrating with a chatbot or a virtual assistant to, you know, schedule meetings or give you reminders. Some of the use cases might be a little narrow right now, but it's definitely somewhere, just as chatbots have grown and expanded, conversational platforms have grown and expanded, that we do expect to see some continued investment. Plus, it's all part of that kind of AI hype chain, which terms can't be much more hyped than AI right now, I don't think. And chatbots and NLP kind of fall right into that model. And we can bring up machine learning too from a commerce perspective. I'm a little, you know, machine learning is great and it powers a lot of these NLP engines and a lot of what's going on in the AI market. But do we need machine learning to do predictive or product recommendations or predictive sort? These feel like things that we've been able to implement before without machine learning and AI. These technologies can help improve them, but, you know, understanding whether it's worth the bang for the buck, there's still a bit of effort there, I think. Some of that buzzwordy AI machine learning areas, that's topics that come up quite often for us. But moving, just continue to move to this auto-scaling cloud solution where we're less worried about the service and the underlying technology of things. That's not going away. I mean, people see the value in that. And that's going to continue to be part of the solutions going forward, I would say.
So I want to step back a little bit. I often see a big disconnect between what folks like, you know, the three of us discuss on a daily basis. And you look at a, you know, legacy retailer, I won't name and shame, but, you know, there are quite a few, you know, old school retailers who fall in this category. And those folks are basically prohibited from using public cloud, right? Because IT departments must centrally procure everything and there are approvals and, you know, how do organizations actually start using real cloud? And by real cloud, I mean not just hosting VMs somewhere else, but actually making use of function as a service and eventing and all of these cool new technologies, both commercial technologies and, you know, actual technical technologies. How do organizations start doing that?
Well, getting past, I had an actual client call this morning where that was their biggest limitation, is they were not allowed to use public cloud services. I can't speak to how you get past some of the mandates and laws, but as you mentioned earlier, I think that picking individual functionalities or starting to pull out pieces of your solution that are cloud available, I think the web content management, the DXP, the separation of the CX applications, where you can pull that off of the commerce platform, for example, leveraging APIs to integrate with that service that can live in the cloud, that's definitely something we see quite a bit of. Picking individual functions, search, as you mentioned before, it's a great example. You know, integrating with a cloud-based search service where you can start to strangle out some of that functionality. The strangler pattern is definitely something we see quite a bit of, I would say. So picking the right place, picking it where you're going to be able to get approval to do it. Maybe something less sensitive than having, you know, your customer data put out in the cloud if that's something, you know, as an organization you're still concerned about. So be it. That's fine. Focusing more on the functional elements or maybe the design elements that can be pushed out and then integrated back to those kind of more system of record or core systems, which our commerce engine, you know, to a degree tends to be, right? Because there's a bit more PCI and PII data we have to deal with on the commerce side of things versus maybe a search engine or even any sort of hosted digital experience platform or web content management solution.
Jumping from cloud to another topic, let's play buzzword bingo. just mention it quickly, AI and ML. If you call yourself a real company, you need to offer something there. And I think everybody has some AI and ML, not only on their website, but hopefully also does some things. But also, as I see the reality, this is probably... older stuff in a new wording with maybe some changed algorithms, but I have not seen that many big game changes yet, in at least in most areas. There might be a few highlights. What is your perspective on that? Is there anything that will change digital commerce?
Well, I agree with you that some of the things that we see value from AI and machine learning, we've been doing in commerce land without AI and machine learning. The recommended products is a great example. Can machine learning help to parse a larger data set to make more accurate suggestions for a customer? Sure. Have we been doing that without machine learning for a long time? Absolutely. I think, as I mentioned before, probably the biggest AI component that we see affecting commerce or just affecting customer experience in general is the natural language processing, which leads to the chatbots and the voice interactions. Kind of adding that new interface or that new engagement channel that clients or customers can then talk to your organization without having to deal with the human to get feedback on fairly straightforward use cases. That's probably the largest part of the kind of AI landscape, the AI hype train, where at least I've seen some actual changes or differences than what we've seen, you know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, using natural language processing to do the understanding, the generation, and kind of driving that conversational engagement side of things. The machine learning parts, besides that, as I've mentioned a couple times, sure, there's probably some value there, but from a commerce perspective, it just to me feels like we've been doing that for years without that. Maybe we can make it better, but maybe there's better places to invest the time and the effort initially, such as improving customer experience or integrating your applications together with your commerce system to create that continuous connected experience.
Great. So I have one final question and then we'll wrap. And this is more philosophical. I mean, maybe this discussion should best be had over beers sometime. But how do we get out of this trap we're in as an industry of using all of these buzzwords all the time? right? If I see another marketing pitch with blockchain in it, I'm going to puke, I think.
Yeah.
You know? And we don't do that, but, you know, there's an awful lot of pressure on tech vendors to do that. And you guys published the hype cycle, which is great because it clearly identifies things that are overhyped. But as an industry, how do we ratchet this down? Because you don't really see this anywhere else except for tech.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because the competition, everybody wants to be the cool, sexy vendor in the room, and playing up some of these hype angles that it's the shiny object in the room. And I'm to some degree guilty of that too. We write research about these shiny objects because that's what people want to know about. I think the more that we can explain underneath the covers that it's not magic, it's still a program. There's still data elements to it. There's still integration efforts. It's still a program that you have to build. Maybe there's some new features to it and ways to do things, but at the end of the day, it's not a whole lot different than what we've done before. Now maybe there's some new capabilities. So I won't say demystifying or debunking, but kind of showing how these new technologies, these new hypey technologies actually work and how they can actually provide value to a customer or a client, I think that'll help. It's going to be tough to, you know, fight back all the marketing buzzword bingo that happens just because that's, you know, people like shiny objects. They're attracted to it, whether you like it or not. But getting past that and really getting into some of the meat of it, and that's where we try to go with some of our GTP research, is explaining how, you know, an NLP engine works and integrates with a commerce or CRM platform, showing how you have to manage the data or massage data to pump it into a machine learning algorithm, trying to, you know, give our readers and customers some practicality in really what's going on under the covers, and just understanding that it's not magic, right? It's still a program. It's still data. There's still components that we understand. Kind of getting past a little bit of the hype and looking under the covers to help show people really what's going on. That'll help. I'm not sure how we completely fight the marketing hype wave, though. That seems to be happening everywhere all the time.
You know what I would love to see? This is just a dream of mine, but to have there be some third-party independent organization, maybe like a Gartner's or somebody like you, where you have a stamp of approval to be able to use the word. Right. So you're Gartner certified headless.
Yeah.
Right. And if you are, then you're, you know, then you rely, then you use these, you know, you have these 10 characteristics. And that way people can't fake the use of these terms like cloud, right? Everybody claims to be cloud, but it's just managed services or APIs or whatever. I'd love to see that someday, to have somebody step up and be that independent arbiter.
I like that. Yeah, maybe Jeff can take back that idea and see if something.
I absolutely can. I can tell you, we spend a lot of time internally debating definitions of AI, cloud, every hypey term you could think of, the definition of it, how we define it within Gartner. That's those are some of the more heated and fun heated in a good way, right? Passionate conversations. How do we define these things? That's where we see a lot of some pretty good internal research and discussions going on. So that's a great idea. I'll definitely take that back and share that with the team.
I just want to cut. All right. You can make the check payable to Dirk and Kelly. I'm joking. So where can people follow your research?
So I'm on LinkedIn, Jeffrey Scourin. Also on the Gartner site, of course, if you have access, you can follow. You can pick whatever track you want to research and follow us there. I will be presenting at our Customer Experience Summit in London later this year. That's in middle of May. And then right before that, the week of May 15th, I'll be presenting at our Enterprise Application Summit in Orlando. So there's a couple of chances to see us live, see me live. But then also we have quite a bit of research published over on the Gartner portal itself as well.
Great. Well, thanks for your time. On behalf of myself and Dirk, we appreciate you being on our podcast and look forward to catching up sometime in person.
Thank you very much for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.